Please be seated. September seemed to slip away pretty quickly this year. And then suddenly September slid onto our calendars, and here we are, sitting in the sanctuary, holding our liquid souvenirs of the season that just was. We have arrived for our in-gathering celebration, where we usher in a new program year and return more fully to our routines. This Sunday, you all are gathering me in as your newly settled minister, and I am just getting situated in this pulpit I have not preached from since last spring, when you called me to UU Wellesley by your congregational vote. We are gathered in a familiar place, but in a way we never have before. As the Greek philosopher Heraclitus noted, we can never step into the same river twice, because waterways are constantly changing and our own lives are continuously evolving. So the water ceremony we have planned for today could not be any more timely. This year, I remembered to bring my own vial. I even brought it over the Atlantic and across state lines. No doubt it was destined for this place. Before I said my final farewell to New York City and moved up here to Metro Boston, my husband Ben and I were able to travel for a couple of weeks. So we took a trip to Transylvania as part of a pilgrimage arranged through the UU Partner Church Council. This was timed so that the start of it would coincide with the grand opening of the House of Religious Freedom in Kolozsvár. From there, we would go on to Tarasko, the picturesque mountain village where UU Wellesley has its partner church. Some of you here know it quite well already. Then deeper into the Transylvanian countryside, then on to the city of Deva, where a makeshift memorial to the Unitarian hero Francis David sits atop the Citadel Mount where he died in prison. Ours was a circuitous route, but it covered all the necessary ground. Along the way, I remembered to pour some water into a small bottle. By the end, though, that felt a bit redundant. Everywhere we went, being foreigners, we pilgrims were served bottled water. We were extended that extravagant brand of hospitality reserved for tourists in a region that only recently became developed enough to attract tourists. We were celebrating religious freedom in a country that had, in living memory, been subjected to a brutal totalitarian regime. The history there is complicated, as history is everywhere. But I felt its complications most powerfully in Deva, where we all stayed in a modern hotel overlooking the Citadel. In the evening, music from the town square floated through our windows, and we could catch a light show from our balcony. In the morning, we could ride, not walk, but ride, a shiny funicular to the top of the Citadel and visit the David Memorial. It was rather comfortable commemorating religious freedom in this style, and I could see how it could readily become the stuff of satire. In the past, the satiric voiceover says, people died for the cause of free religion, so that you might live according to the dictates of your conscience and not be threatened with death for holding your beliefs. But please, by all means, enjoy this nighttime view and your sparkling mineral water. Too often, we are tempted to treat the struggle for religious freedom as a historic relic, but that would be a grave error, I think. Standing inside the prison cell where David was thought to have died, key details get lost when a history is especially shameful. I thought how convenient it would have been for him to recant his beliefs, and how heroic it was for him to refuse. It mattered little that David effectively authored the Declaration of Religious Freedom that was for a few golden years the law of the land in Transylvania. Even his high standing as a bishop did not prevent the Unitarian Church from disavowing him when they feared his views were becoming too radical. His imprisonment was a stark betrayal of one of the founders of the faith. It seems fair to say that his death as a religious dissident still haunts Unitarian churches there. Today, anyone who wishes to be included in congregational membership must sign a declaration that they are joining the church free from any elements of coercion. Centuries of religious persecution have made the people in Transylvania understandably wary. For them, martyrdom was a dread reality and also a distinct possibility. It's hard, I think, for most of us in this sanctuary today to absorb the emotional import of that, and also important that we try. In the 10 points he outlines in response to the perennial question, what do Unitarian Universalists believe? American minister David O. Rankin writes, "We believe in the freedom of religious expression." He considers chief among our beliefs this notion that all individuals should be encouraged to develop their own personal ideologies and to present openly their religious opinions without fear of censure or reprisal. The freedom that Rankin describes is non-negotiable as the foundation of a liberal faith. Rankin's journey to Unitarian Universalism began with a departure from the religion of his upbringing. Like the vast majority of American UUs, Rankin came to this religious tradition from another. He rejected creedal Christianity, but I find it telling that one of the prime ambitions of his ministry was articulating these 10 core beliefs. Over the course of the coming year at UU Wellesley, we will consider each one of these 10 points, one by one, month after month, in the sermon series we've just this morning begun together, titled What We Believe. So this is your first installment, surprise. It feels a bit slippery, honestly, to do this at the outset of our time together, but I am also convinced that it is imperative to the future of this faith community. Because what I have found in my various ministries, honestly, is that as much as we use value freedom of religion as an abstract ideal, we are quickly confounded by it and its human particularities. Notice the order of the challenge Rankin issues by insisting that we find our own authentic religious expression by developing our personal theologies and openly presenting our religious views without fear. I sometimes question how fearless people can be in openly presenting their religious views, not their political views, not their social views, their religious views here in our congregations. In the same passage of the UUA bylaws that outline the 7 principles and the 6 sources of our UU faith, there's lovely language that proclaims, "Grateful for the religious pluralism which enriches and ennobles our faith, we are inspired to deepen our understanding and expand our vision." To my mind, we don't put those lines on nearly enough of our pamphlets and bookmarks, because in our UU congregations, we are asked to embrace religious pluralism, not merely tolerate it. To be clear, there are very few places around the globe where this is customary. There are relatively few places in America where it is. When I think of what our UU congregations are attempting, I am awed and humbled by the project. We are creating a religious counterculture that considers pluralism enriching and ennobling instead of threatening and destabilizing. We look to encounter one another at profound levels, surrendering our preconceptions and prejudices, expanding our ideas of what lies in bounds or out of bounds of this particular religious movement. How better to share, to pursue our shared spiritual growth? According to Rankin, religion that is truly relevant teaches us to respond to the challenges in our lives and is connected to actual experience. As UUs, we have a religious outlook that looks to support our integrating our individual experiences into something coherent and meaningful. The Quakers have an old adage, "Let your life speak." As our kissing cousins in the Radical Reformation, Quakers have a great deal to teach us. Let your life speak, and then listen closely for what it has to tell you. Because our life experiences are revelations in their own right. We UUs can share them with one another as freely as we would dare. So dare, please, dare. We cannot lose our sense of religious daring. We need it rather desperately these days. As a particularly small religious minority, UUs are asked to live their faith boldly. Many of you found your way to these pews by striking out in spiritual exploration of uncharted waters. Others of you may have come originally for a spouse or your children or your parents or possibly a friend. Maybe you stayed and they went. Maybe you are wondering whether you too should go. Or maybe you grew up in this church and would never dream of going anywhere else because what other options could possibly rival it? One of the primer books on Unitarian Universalism is titled A Chosen Faith, which seems as pithy a description as any. But it requires our continually choosing, and that makes folks a little nervous. When he was religiously unaffiliated, Rankin writes, he believed he was faced with a clear choice to be bound or to be free. In our UU congregations, paradoxically, we are bound to be free. Rankin calls us to build a new and positive commitment to religion, even as we find peaceful closure with what has been. Today, I can have a healthy appreciation for elements of my religious upbringing elsewhere. And coming into spiritual maturity means that I no longer speak of it disparagingly or of its current adherents. A few years ago, I made a promise to myself to not denigrate anyone's religion, and to name religious prejudice whenever it arose, which I noticed it did with surprising frequency in some UU circles. If our first principle is freedom of religious expression, as Rankin maintains, we hold that freedom sacrosanct, not just for the people in our pews, but for the people everywhere. There is a particular genius to the eclecticism of the UU faith, Rankin writes, which lies in its recognition that religion is not an isolated incident or event, but the expression of spirit's relationship to the world in the search for meaning and the joy of discovery. Standing with my fellow pilgrims at the David Memorial high up on that Citadel Mount in Deva, I felt the impenetrable strength of his spirit. We remember him as a great Unitarian, but he came to that theology much later in life. Before he was the preacher who converted the only Unitarian sovereign in history, David was a Calvinist bishop. Before being a Calvinist bishop, David had been a Lutheran priest. And before he was a Lutheran priest, David had been a Catholic priest. Certainly the days of the Protestant Reformation were heady times when so much was in flux, but clearly David was a seeker. He was not only a seeker, but also a finder. In the end, he would rather forfeit his life than surrender his own long-sought truth. It is commonly charged that Unitarian Universalist churches have become havens for people who cannot quite make up their minds, Rankin writes in his piece on our beliefs. One wit has written that a Unitarian Universalist is a person who walks the thin line between confusion and indecision. As UU jokes go, that one's not bad. It at least hints at how difficult it is to keep an open mind, especially in a world that wants matters decided already. The rising tides of authoritarian movements are troubling globally. During my weeks abroad, I was every bit as disturbed by what I saw and heard of it in Eastern Europe as I have been by what I've seen and heard of it lately here in the US. These brands of nationalism and xenophobia are antithetical to our religious values of freedom and toleration. They tighten borders and they constrict imaginations. Sadly, they revile pluralistic practices. Historic Unitarianism could take root in Transylvania because it was a region full of religious intersections, a place where European Jews settled alongside Muslims at the edge of the Ottoman Empire, where Protestants could straddle the border between Roman Catholicism and Eastern Orthodoxy. Here, the dynamics of faith were for a little while fluid. People intermarried. They exchanged sacred scripture. They risked getting better acquainted. They wondered whether they weren't actually all children of the same God, just reading different books. As we were reminded at the opening of the House of Religious Freedom, the Edict of Tortur proclaimed that none should be reviled on account of her or his faith. The Hungarian Unitarian Catechism used in Transylvanian churches today declares Egy az Isten, which translates God is one. That was the prayer I offered up at the David Memorial when I was asked to, partly because it was the only Transylvanian prayer I knew by heart, but also because it is something I believe deep within my soul, that God is one. You may believe differently, and that is fine. Although the God of my understanding is one, we are many. We are many, and here we all belong. We are as motley a crew as we need to be. I hold that forth as an article of faith. Every one of you here is a blessing, and I am grateful to whatever currents carried you our way. Each year, our in-gathering celebration gives us a chance to step into Heraclitus's never the same river twice, and wade out a bit further together, taking one courageous step after another. We arrive hoping to see faces that are familiar and also some that are not. If that makes us wishy-washy, so be it. Those who would call ours a watered-down religion probably do not appreciate water the way we do. They do not see its force and potential in the same light. We come here to pour ourselves out to one another, to acknowledge our hopes and doubts and fears and ambitions and plans. Here we risk naming our authentic and evolving personal beliefs, because this is our house of religious freedom, and we are determined to make it a home for all that is holy to us. Please rise in body or spirit now and join me in singing hymn number 1064 in your teal hymnal, Blue Goat Home.
home.